Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man, and for the next hour, you're in Finland. And we're here with Danny running the board tonight. Good evening, Danny.
Good evening.
And it's a beautiful day here in Northern Virginia.
Yes, it is.
And we're getting ready for an election next Tuesday. But there was an election this past week in some states, and we're not going to say a lot about it, but a number of things happened on Tuesday I'll get to in a minute. The big news today is that the leader of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, has been killed by U.S. forces, U.S. bombs, and the news media is just saturated tonight, all day, with what does this mean for the war in Iraq? It's going to get better. It's going to get worse. Will there be fewer attacks? Will there be more attacks? Will this decimate Iraq? Are they pretty much spread out now? All of that good stuff. So I'll say I have a little bit to say about that. Actually, I'll cover it right now because this has been covered to death today, and I'm not that interested in covering it in gory detail. It'll help a little bit. Obviously, you take out the top guy, and you've helped your cause. The difficulty, I think, is that the real problem in Iraq is that there's a percentage of the Iraqis that are tired of us being there, so tired that a percentage of them are willing to kill us. And we have to stay till there's stability, and we're not going to get stability as long as American troops are on Iraqi soil. So there's not a good answer over there right now, and I pity President Bush, because he's the only thing he knows how to do is stay the course. And I don't know that stay the course is going to get us there. We'll see. But at least we got the top guy in Al-Qaeda in Iraq. I guess the other thing to remember is that he was nobody at the time of 9/11 and at the time we went in to Iraq. He emerged as a leader and he came into Iraq because we were there. So if we had not been there, who knows how radicalized he would have been? I don't know. I assume he would still have been radicalized, but he wouldn't have been able to kill Americans, I don't think. Anyway, Tom DeLay is resigning from Congress this week. He said his farewells today in Washington. Of course, he's under indictment in a case that he expects to get off from, but there's bad news for him on other fronts, including the Jack Abramoff thing. It was in the news this week that his wife has received, and I guess another family member together have received just under $500,000 from lobbyists who have business in front of Congress over the last few years. And they've done it for work, but some of these people, and it isn't just his wife, there's other senators' wives and congressmen's wives that are getting paid to do work like consulting, lobbying. But these are people who've never done any consulting or lobbying before. So the thing that the Justice Department is interested in is, did they suddenly become a consultant or a lobbyist because they have a spouse who's in power and can do things? Because that would explain who they're really lobbying. Anyway, we'll see about all that. But DeLay resigned. Iraq got an interior minister and a defense minister this week. That was the big holdup since the election. And that's good news for Iraq as well. We had elections in California and other states. Two things happened in California. One, the Democrats selected the person they're going to send up against Schwarzenegger in the fall. And he's the liberal who's the darling of the bloggers as opposed to the moderate, who some people thought might be tougher for Schwarzenegger to beat. We will see. California's still a blue state. It'll be interesting to see if they give Arnold four more years. Also, in the 50th district in California, this is the seat vacated by the Dukester, Duke Cunningham, caught not with $87,000 of cash in his freezer the way William Jefferson, representative of Louisiana and Democrat, was recently. But the Dukester was caught living on a yacht that says Dukester, and it doesn't belong to him. It was given to him rent-free. And he sold his home at an inflated price of $700,000, approximately over the value of it out in California, to a lobbyist, who then turned around and sold it as a loss. So you have to believe that was a $700,000 gift from the lobbyist. Anyway, he's out of Congress and in prison. So Republicans were planning to hold on to the seat. Democrats were hoping to take it away. People were saying this is a bellwether for the fall elections. The Republicans won that seat by about 5%. This is a 7-month appointment till the end of this current Congress in January. And so there's another election in the fall, and it's the same two people. The woman who ran in this runoff race will face the Republican in the fall. This has always been a relatively safe seat for Republicans, and they held on to it here. So Republicans are hoping that means that the anger of the voters is not that strong out there. Democrats are playing it down and saying, look, this was always a Republican district. It was crazy to think it was in play, but it was, and we got beat pretty good. That doesn't mean anything for November. We shall see what it means for November. I suspect the Republicans will take heart from this, and maybe they should. Maybe they'll hold on to Congress. We will see. In any case, today is Thursday, June 8th, 2006, and on this day, Danny, in 1998, the National Rifle Association elected Moses to be its president. Actually, elected Charlton Heston. But that was his most famous role in the Ten Commandments. And he went from his most famous quotes where he was Moses. He had several famous quotes. Let my people go. Actually, that might have been a song. But the point is, he had several famous quotes as Moses. But what we all remember him for now is holding up a rifle at the front of a National Rifle Association convention back in those days and saying, from my cold, dead hands. Because there's a bumper sticker out there. I don't think it was ever a very famous statement. A bumper sticker years and years ago that said, you can take away my gun when you pry it out of my cold, dead hand. Pretty strong stuff. Strong stuff. You know, these kinds of people would be good over in Iraq fighting Al-Qaeda because those guys are tough, too. Now, we got plenty of tough troops over there doing that. So, also on this date, the Federal Trade Commission brought an antitrust suit against Intel Corporation in 1998. Now, Intel makes chips, right? The Pentium 3, Pentium 4, Pentium 5 stuff that we now know and read about, and the old chips as well. They don't make all the chips, but they make most of the chips that are used in personal computers in this country and around the world. And so the FTC brought an antitrust suit against Intel for their policies that basically punished other companies that developed microchips. Now, I only bring that up. It's a rather boring fact because I want to bring up something about Intel. Andy Grove is the president of Intel. He stepped down recently, but he's a well-known corporate manager because he's regarded as quite good at his job. But the guy before that, the guy that founded Intel, his name is Gordon Moore. And he came up with Moore's Law. Have you ever heard of Moore's Law, Danny?
Sounds familiar, but I can't.
Well, Moore's Law says that the processing power of computer chips will double every 18 months. What Gordon Moore did in the early days of Intel, he looked at what his scientists and developers were able to accomplish in the laboratory. And when he charted the processing power of computers, it doubled every month, which is essentially an exponential curve, so it's going to get quite steep, quite fast. And people said, well, you can't keep that up. And he said, well, why not? Look at how this curve is going. And in fact, for whatever strange reason, that relationship has held approximately every 18 months. Some people say it's closer to 2 years, but 18 months is closer to the real truth. Approximately every 18 months, the processing power of the chips that Intel's able to bring to market doubles. And so, you know, when we got our first computers, they had 640K in them, right? 640 kilobytes of processing power. I want to say it's basically random access memory as opposed to storage, which is read-only memory. And it has doubled to the point where now the machines that we're working with in this room are 3 years old, but they are they're gigahertz, actually, is the way they think about it, because that's measured in clock speed. But we're talking, you go from kilobytes to megabytes to gigahertz. So we've gone from thousands to millions to trillions is what gigahertz are. So This exponential relationship has held ever since Gordon Moore, the founder of Intel, discovered it many, many years ago, back in the 70s, I suppose, is when he discovered the relationship, because it had been going on for a while. Anyway, enough about computers and about current events in terms of, you know, I'm sorry, I didn't mean current events, I meant this day in history. We're going back to current events. So the Senate defeated the same-sex marriage ban this week. I talked about this on my Monday night show, so I won't spend a lot of time on it here, except to say when they brought this up 4 months before the 2004 election, they got 48 votes in the Senate. Now, to show how far away it is from actually passing, let me give you a constitutional quiz here, Danny. What do you know about how many votes it takes to pass different kinds of bills in the Senate? Anything?
Not much.
Okay.
I'm actually taking government next year.
So. Now it's next year. Okay. Well, I'll lay it out then. So a normal bill, you need 51 votes out of 100. There's 100 senators, so it makes it easy to do the calculation. You need 51 votes. That's a normal bill. However, in the Senate, anyone can filibuster. That is, anyone can get up and talk endlessly. There's a unlimited debate clause. And to cut off the unlimited debate, you have to have 60 votes for a motion of cloture. And so that's what the judge's argument was about in the last couple of years, is can you filibuster judge nominations? And they now have an agreement that they won't, except in extraordinary circumstances. That's the gang of 14 senators, the 7 Republicans, 7 Democrats, that said, look, we're not going to let the two extremes drive us to a game of chicken and have us run off the cliff. This is a collegial body, and we're going to take control of it. But you need 60 votes then, for all practical purposes, to shut off debate on most measures, because if somebody wants to block it bad enough, all you have to do is have 41 votes, and they cannot shut off debate, which means they cannot bring it to the floor for a vote. But a constitutional amendment, which is what they're talking about here with this marriage, defense of marriage amendment, it's not called that, it's called a marriage protection amendment, I think. You have to have 67 votes in the Senate, and you have to have 2/3 of the House vote on it to send it to the states to become a constitutional amendment. And then 3/4 of the state legislatures have to ratify it for it to become an amendment. And then it's just an amendment. The president doesn't have to sign it. No, the president has nothing to do with amending the Constitution, which is interesting, is that Bush has jumped into this debate. And as I said on Monday, the problem here is that this is primarily about politics. The Republicans are trying to rally their base. Bush is trying to shore up his ratings. And so they've trotted this out again, because the last time you heard anyone in the country discuss it was 4 months before the 2004 elections. It was a big deal then, and they were saying, oh, we've got to protect marriage. It's a crisis. And then the crisis went away after the election, and nothing was done. President hasn't given a speech about it in 2 years. They've taken no action. He's not twisting arms to get people to vote for it. And now we're 4 months before another election, and they bring it out again. Bush gave 2 speeches in the last week explaining why this is crucial, and people are out there saying the sky is falling. This is a matter of life and death, one of the most important, if not the most important, issues facing the country today. All that kind of rhetoric. And it was voted down. Actually, the motion for cloture to cut off debate was voted down. They got 49 votes this time. So 2 years ago, they got 48 votes. Today, they got 49 votes. They need 67 for this to pass. They need 60 votes to shut off the debate, and then they could vote on it. And then they still got to get to 67. It isn't going to happen. They knew it wasn't going to happen, but they want the political issue to go to the base, the Republican base, the conservative base, in the fall, and say, look what the bad Democrats are doing, and these moderate Republicans, they're keeping us from turning this into a God-fearing country like you want. And I fear God, but I fear the conservatives and Republicans that put this kind of dreck forward even more, because it gets even worse. They're now going to deal with, sometime in the next 2 weeks or so, the Senate is also going to deal with the flag-burning amendment. It's actually called a flag desecration amendment. Now, this goes back a long ways. Some people have been introducing a flag desecration amendment for, well, more than 20 years. And let's take a short break, and when we come back, I'm going to trace this from George H.W. Bush, who came out in favor of this amendment, to the present day, and explain to you why this would be a bad thing to do to the Constitution.
Naturally, and naturally she wanted to dance.